to Season 7, Episode 20 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing Linux on the desktop, and we'll read your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat thing on the website and in the hash UPC IRC channel. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are Alan.
Hello.
Laura.
Hello.
And Tony.
Good evening.
How are you all?
Great.
Fantastic.
Good. I assume Laura's well too, but she's distracted.
I'm fine, I'm here.
She's fiddling with knobs and buttons.
So, yeah. Alan, what have you been up to since last we spoke?
I've been on vacation.
Vacation?
Yes.
Oh, good.
I went on holiday and stayed in a fort.
Awesome. Where was that?
On the Isle of Wight.
Awesome.
Oh.
It's really cool.
Well, it wasn't one of the ones like in the sea, was it?
No, it was on the land, but it was on a little hill. So you go up on the roof and you can see all around the island. It's got a really good view, great sunsets, and it's an old military training base that's been converted into nice little apartments that you can stay in. It's really, really nice.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah, really, had a good time.
Nice. Yeah. It's all well fitted out and everything as well. And yeah.
How were the 1970s?
Yeah. So we spent a lot of time on the beach digging, playing frisbee, teaching my son how to not throw frisbee into the sea.
Good.
He failed at that. He just the wind caught it. That's the excuse I gave. Yeah, it was good fun.
Cool. Excellent. Mm. Good stuff.
Yeah. Laura, how about you?
I've been setting up a Logitech Harmony universal remote control.
Ooh, is that spacey looking thing that was on the chair earlier?
Lights up.
I know. It lights up when you don't think it will either. It's a bit disconcerting.
So is this one which you take all the controls in your house and you point them at this one and then
you put them in a special room together.
Yeah.
And they have a special cuddle. and then you get a Harmony remote.
And then it learns what all the buttons are.
So anything that'll take an infrared input it comes with Windows software, and I spent ages trying to get it working in a Windows virtual box thing.
Yeah.
And the USB wouldn't work.
Oh,
And then I thought, just on the off chance, I'll Google it for Ubuntu. There's a package in the Ubuntu Software Center that just works.
Hey!
So this is what, a driver, you plug it in and it...
Yeah, so the Logitech has got a central database online, and it's sort of crowdsourced. So if you have a device that isn't in the database, you can add it to the database. So it means it always needs to be connecting to that. So you go through a wizard on the website with your thing connected by USB, and you type in the exact model numbers, if you know them, of your devices, and it finds it in the database, creates like a configuration file for you, which you then download, and then use the software to zap it across the USB.
Ah, cool.
And it just works.
So what, did all of your things have an entry in the database already?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Well, you've not got really any wild esoteric stuff, you know, a Sony monitor, a TV. I expect most people have got those. But
yeah, and I knew the exact models as well, which helped. The Blu-ray player and the Virgin TiVo. Even the Virgin TiVo, I had to look up the model on the bottom of it.
Right.
Aside from that, yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Tony, what have you been doing?
Well, I've been getting ready for my trip to Malawi.
You're going to Malawi?
Yeah, I may have mentioned it a few times on this very show.
You mean you're not going to be here?
No, apparently not. So, obviously, you know, going to an African country is an excuse to buy some equipment, some technology.
Of course, yes.
Buy some technology. So one of the things I bought is a solar panel.
Which is strapped to your back.
I was going to say for your head, but yeah, go on.
So I can put it on my backpack, for example, over the back of that, and charge either a USB device directly or a USB battery pack, which I can then use to recharge cameras or phones or whatever I might need when I'm out there. And it's quite cool. It's about the size of a notebook, a large notebook, as in a physical paper thing, not a netbook, notebook, computer type thing. Slightly bigger than A5. Folds in two.
Cool.
And I tried it in the back garden, and it gets is able to charge my battery pack there, so I assume it'll be okay in Africa. It doesn't need direct sunlight, which is really interesting.
I imagine Malawi has better hours of sunlight than we do here.
Yeah, quite probably.
Right.
But I think just being outside on a reasonably bright day is enough. I don't think it needs direct sunlight.
That's cool.
So it might reflect off your head or anything like that.
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay, just checking.
I don't know what you mean by that.
Okay, shall we go?
Yeah.
So I wanted to have a discussion because a news article crossed my laptop today, which it had a kind of sensationalist headline, but they always do. And
go on, tease us.
It was called "Why Some Schools Are Selling All Their iPads."
Not the iPads.
Yeah, well, you know how there's been a push to improve ICT equipment in schools, and often they're moving away from having dedicated ICT labs and instead having computers involved in multiple lessons, mm-hmm. and you just get out your device, whatever that is, and use it in that lesson for whatever's appropriate, whether it's maths or science or humanities or whatever. And then it goes away in the cupboard. But you don't all have to traipse off to an ICT department, centrally managed. And iPads seemed like the panacea because they're lightweight, long battery life, lots of easy to use software and stuff. Well, it turns out actually the cost is not the thing that's interesting. And in this article, they're talking about the fact that some schools are getting rid of their iPads and actually replacing them with Linux-based machines, Chromebooks.
Interesting.
Right. Well, so you sound disappointed there when you go, oh.
Yeah. Well, if we always hope that when schools replace their equipment with Linux-based machines, it's going to be Ubuntu, right?
That was the dream.
So our Google, based on this article, which lists some schools, but it may be blowing that up slightly, but let's assume all schools are replacing their iPads with Chromebooks,
yes. right?
For the sake of this conversation, is that necessarily a bad thing?
Is it a good thing to have the same of everything? That's the same thing in every school, regardless what it is.
So you think having diversity is a good thing?
Just in terms of power.
Right.
If Google has every school, it's not better than when Microsoft had every school.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's a reasonable.
Okay. Yeah.
But then again, from looking at it from the general Linux ecosystem point of view, if every school has a load of Linux machines, then that means that the devices which they buy are going to be devices which they can plug into Linux machines, which is going to mean, more general device support in Linux, probably. And not that it's bad at the moment, but I mean, the schools tend to buy some wacky stuff like those little voting machines and other odd things like that. So perhaps we're going to see a sort of a more general
demand for drivers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I to be honest, from what I've seen in terms of buying like gadgets and so on, there has been more of a general tendency for companies to say, yes, this runs on Linux, and specifically this runs on Ubuntu. So saying this will work with a Chromebook as well seems like a
well,
natural thing.
Okay, but Chromebooks are generally very similar to iPads in that they're a sealed box.
Right.
You like any other device, you can install software on it, and there are apparently better tools for Chromebooks for centrally managing the devices than there is for Apple devices. In a school where you have hundreds of students and a device goes bad, you can take that out and put another one in, deploy the applications, in inverted commas, applications, the web apps to that device, and the student can carry on working. It's one of the big selling points of Chromebooks is you just
It's essentially
log in.
It's like a thin client over the web, isn't it? If you just log into Chome, you've got all your web apps there, presumably with your Google account, which is done by Google Apps for Education.
So is that the Linux part, just the making it work as a thin client?
Well, no, Linux is only a tiny part of what's on the Chromebook.
It's Chrome,
really. It's Chrome the browser.
Oh, right, yeah.
Chrome logging into your Google account.
But to be fair, the vast majority of what it is what's in the cloud. Yeah. If all of the stuff that Chromebooks connect to and all the applications that you use on a Chromebook didn't exist, there would be very little use for a Chromebook. If all those web apps didn't exist, why would you buy a Chromebook, right?
Yeah.
But they do.
The driving force for schools to buy Chromebooks is that there are lots of very useful web apps for education.
Right.
Is that what we're getting at?
Are there?
That's certainly one of the reasons why is that, first of all, the fact that they come with a hardware keyboard that an iPad doesn't.
Right.
So having a hardware keyboard makes it easier for the students to get some of their exercises done that is harder with a virtual keyboard.
Yeah.
And the devices are arguably potentially more robust than, you know, an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, more easily replaceable. But my bigger concern is that as Laura says, it's bad if every school there's no diversity and everyone's using the same thing in the same way that we have right now, where everyone's using Windows, right?
Yeah.
We're in no better situation if everyone's using Chromebooks. Although the side benefit is that Google do a lot of investment in open source projects and open source technology. So as a byproduct of people buying Chromebooks, money goes to Google. Money going to Google is a good thing because Google invests in open source projects. Okay, that's a benefit, a perceivable benefit, right?
Yeah.
Whereas money going to Apple arguably is detrimental.
Except all the bits of open source software that Apple do own.
And like Microsoft
cups.
Increasingly
like
investing
cups
in
and what? Darwin? You know, do you care about that?
Well, I'm
talking about useful libraries and useful technologies.
And things like Summer of Code and
They give thousands and thousands of pounds to students to work on open source projects over the summer. So let's put that aside. In the same way that I would put aside the fact that Bill Gates gives huge amounts of money to anti-malaria drugs. You know, that's separate from the fact that Microsoft have a monopoly.
Yeah.
You know, they are two entirely separate things. So with Google, if you're giving all of your students Google products, right, then they're, instead of being used to using Microsoft Office and thinking that Microsoft Office is the one true office, they now think that Google Apps is the one true office and Gmail is the one true email. And, you know, any of the other web apps that they use within the Google ecosystem are the one thing.
Again.
Yeah, and so they would grow up thinking that's the normal thing to use. And that doesn't put us in necessarily a better situation than when you're telling people to use Visual Studio, Microsoft Office, and Windows.
Because Google Docs isn't open source or anything, is it?
Exactly. Okay, it's free, but then so is Microsoft Office to students, so is Visual Studio to students. So, they don't see that there's no perceived benefit in terms of price there. It's more about, you know, the first hit is free, getting you locked in so that as you go through your education and then when you leave education,
you're always going to use Google. You're always going to use it.
And there's the whole normalizing of keeping your data elsewhere.
Yeah, there's that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this does worry me a bit that it's, you know, it's seen as, you know, Apple bad, Google good, you know, because the Chromebook, the good things that Google do, is, you know, counterbalanced by these worries. I mean, if you could buy a device, a laptop that was the size and weight and shape of a Chromebook, but connected to completely free services like OwnCloud, like that thing we mentioned last week, EtherCalc,
yeah.
and so on and so on. If you could make something that was a Linux desktop that was lean and booted, I don't know, Firefox or Chromium or, you know, whatever other browser you like. And had baked in all the necessary guts to make it work with those.
Yeah. And you'd have those hosted on a server in the institution.
You would, and you would have access to those documents, and people could put them on a USB stick and take them away.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be locked into that website.
Yeah.
So there's quite a lot of issues around the Chromebook that aren't just about the software stack. People don't like them for other reasons. They don't think they're very functional, they're locked down, you can't do a lot of things with them. It's part of the importance about having computers in school that people are free to tinker with them and change them.
No, I don't think it is. I mean, it is. I would like it to be.
Should it be?
I would like it to be, but it isn't. Because in a classroom where you've got a limited period of time, you know, you've got a one-hour class, okay, knock off 5 minutes at each end for them to unpack and pack up. Knock off 5-10 minutes for you to explain what you're going to do in that lesson. So realistically, you've got half an hour to 40 minutes in the middle where you're actually going to get stuff done. If you take away a chunk of time at the start of that lesson for booting up a slow, rubbish Windows computer or installing updates or starting up an application or downloading an application from the local LAN, all that kind of stuff gets in the way of the reason why children are there, which is to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if if you've got a device which boots nearly instantly and starts applications nearly instantly because they're not installed on the local rubbish Celeron, they're on some gigantic data center in the cloud or in a server in the back end or wherever, I don't think tinkering is the thing that class is there for. The reason they're there is to learn stuff. Whether that's a good or bad thing, I don't know.
They can get the Raspberry Pis out for that.
Well, yeah, you can have separate classes for like computing. Rather than
computers
like,
as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Here's another worry as well, if everything's in the cloud and the school's internet connection goes down.
Yeah.
Which happens.
Which, fancy that. Yeah. Schools don't have the most robust internet connections in the world. Yeah, yeah. Totally. Go on.
Also, should you be supporting them being able to take them home? I mean, what do they do with the iPads? Do they tend to leave them in school? But I know some private schools have them where they just take.
But they don't need to take them home because they can go home and they can log on to Gmail and Google Apps and
they've got a laptop at home.
The same things at home. Okay, yeah. Well,
because they might well have mobile phones that are connected, but not necessarily laptops.
Right. So depending upon what your financial situation is, you may or may not have a computing device at home. So your main computer might be that Chromebook at school.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But so then the kid goes home and says to their parents, I use a laptop at school. They don't know it's a Chromebook, it's a laptop. Or maybe they do. Giving them the intelligence.
This made-up world.
But they may well go home and say, I want a Chromebook or a laptop. And, a parent who's on limited income goes to amazon.co.uk and types laptop, the first thing you see is a Chromebook. Yeah. And it's cheaper than all the others. Hmm. So, it's getting to the point where you see it at school, then you go home and you buy one at home because it's the same thing. And you can log on with the same account, no doubt, if, the school policy allows it, log on with the same account. My wife does the same thing. At her school, they use Google Apps for their email, but they don't tend to use Google Docs very much. They're still pretty stuck in Microsoft Office because they use Windows. Mm. But I've created documents for them and shared them to members of staff and stuff, and they love it because I can edit it and update it, and then they see it changing. It's like magic while I'm looking at it. Alan's editing the document.
It's an interesting thing to try and get your head around if you're so used to the idea of Word documents on a shared network drive,
or USB keys.
Yeah.
Claire brings home a bag full of USB keys from school. All the kids save their work on USB keys, and she brings them home in order to evaluate the stuff and then take them back because they use Office.
Yeah, whereas you just think there's a better way of doing it, and that's stick it in the cloud.
Yeah, put it in the cloud.
Yeah, or your own cloud if you wish to make one of those. But it's an interesting move. I mean, the Chromebook is really widely advertised in mainstream media, TV and posters.
Billboards and
yeah, exactly. So it is something that could potentially gain traction, even though people don't know or care it's running Linux.
And if you're not after a laptop, they now do Chromeboxes that are effectively desktop PCs in a very small form factor. You bring your own keyboard, mouse and screen, and, When the person with limited income has a desktop PC from the past and wants to update it, they might just say, well, all I ever use it for is surfing the web and, doing my homework. Just buy a Chromebox, which is cheap.
No, you heard it here first then, folks. This could be the year of the Chrome thing. What's the generic term for Chrome running devices?
Chromebox,
Google,
I guess.
Google on the desktop.
This is the year of Google on the desktop.
Gotted.
Yeah, so I'd be interested to hear from any of our listeners if they are at schools that either use iPads or Android tablets or Chromebooks or anything other than, bog standard Windows PCs or what you do. I'd be very interested to hear. And if, you've got rid of something and replaced it with something else, what those are.
And what you think of it.
Yes.
Indeed, yeah. It's time now for some command line love. And when you want to know what day of the week a particular date is?
All the time.
Yeah, yeah.
What day is it today?
It is Wednesday.
Okay.
Well, that was quite an easy example.
Okay.
But imagine a more what day would it be
tomorrow?
Oh, I was going to ask that.
Thursday.
What about yesterday?
Unless you're not listening. Oh, no. But there's a great little command line love that we have borrowed from our friends over at CLI Magic on Twitter and modified a little bit, which basically will predict the date. Not predict, just tell you.
I think it might be Wednesday.
It will tell you what the date, the day of the week is for any date that you care to throw at it. So, for example, November the 15th this year is a Saturday. And then November the 15th next year is a Sunday. And then, spookily, November the 15th in 2016 is a Tuesday.
Because it's a leap year.
Because it is a leap year.
So you can look this up on the calendar, can't you?
Yeah, but if you wanted to script it for some reason.
Or if you wanted to know a year for where you don't have a paper calendar handy.
Yep, or you know, you wanted to know
paper
what...
Paper calendar?
Or even electric...
Was that really your first thought when I said look it up on the calendar?
Yeah, it was.
But okay, I think it is quicker to use this command to see what date the 15th of November is in the year 2079.
You are probably right.
Then it would be to click.
Ooh, that's after the 2038 Unix date. Ooh, never know what day that's going to be.
My tutor at sixth form, he could tell you the date for any date you threw at him instantly from his head.
Did you ever check whether he was getting it right or not?
I think he was. I don't think he would have given us the wrong one.
He's just got that level of confidence about him that he'll say Tuesday, and you'll go, really? Wow, he's brilliant.
Yeah, but he was in the Guinness Book of Records for two consecutive years in the 1970s for reciting pi to the however many digits.
Okay, so yeah, I believe he probably could do that then, yeah.
But then again, once you reach a certain point with pi, people don't know whether you're right or wrong.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, you're just reciting random numbers.
Making it up as you go along. But yeah, so there you go. It's a useful little command I love. Whack it in the command line and then see what it comes up with.
And now it's time for some feedback.
Ooh.
Slick.
So, Brian James emailed us saying, I just listened to your last episode and I was thinking to myself that everyone seemed very reserved and uncharacteristically unenthusiastic.
Oh dear, that's us.
And that the segments were taking a lot longer than normal. Then I realised that somehow my Beyond Pod had switched from the 3x speed that I normally listen to podcasts at back to 1x. I corrected it and you sound like normal now.
Wow. 3x.
So he listens to this 3x as quickly as I am talking now.
So what happens if we talk really fast? Does that make it really hard for him to hear?
Really? We've talked really quickly. They're really confusing. Let's not do that then.
So Mark will sound really squeaky.
Yes.
No, because a lot of players will actually do pitch adjustments. So they'll speed it up, but they'll adjust it so it still sounds the original pitch, just faster.
So if you've got to speed it up, you've got to slow it down.
You've got to drop the pitch of the sped up sound.
Okay. That's before he's born.
Yeah.
What?
Nothing.
Dear me.
Eurovision gag.
Yes.
Well, that's all the feedback, but we've still got
topical
7 minutes to.
What have you been doing lately?
So, go on.
No.
I've got something to say.
It's gone.
I had it, but I thought Tony was going to give feedback. So.
No, I have no feedback. Okay. What were you going to say?
Nothing.
Anybody in IRC got feedback?
We have.
This
our...
is weird.
This hasn't happened before, has it?
And it's not my fault.
No, we have Dave H and Super Engineer asking about my solar panel that I was talking about.
Okay.
So they want to know how many watts it is. Apparently, it's 7 watts.
Wow.
So it has a little USB connection in the pocket on the back of it, a socket, if you like, a USB socket, if one could imagine such a thing. A standard USB socket to which one could then connect a device via any standard USB cable.
Right.
So you can connect a phone if you have a USB lead for it. So we'll make sure one had one of those. A battery, if you have a USB battery charger for your camera, for example, or any device that charges over USB directly, just plug that straight
in. So does the solar panel have a battery in it and of itself, or does it only charge other things?
It only charges other things.
Right, and you're taking a battery with you that you're going to charge from the solar panel?
I think I'm going to, yes. I wouldn't necessarily have to, because hopefully there would be enough sun that I could charge
directly
a battery during a day and then use it later. But I think I'm going to take a battery.
One of those USB connector ones.
Yeah, the same sort of thing. Alan Bell, I think, showed me the first one of those I saw. charging up his smartphone. It says something
at
when
a
you
wedding.
Have to, yes, when you have to take a smartphone, a spare battery to.
Have one.
Yeah,
and Sophie has one, and Claire has one.
I've got one there
because they just don't last 24 hours.
And what does that say?
Right.
That we're all buying batteries for our phones.
Indeed, yeah.
Someone should make a new phone that's better than all the others. That,
Can you have $30 million to do that, please?
You know what I found out this week? Chromium now no longer has support for Netscape-style plugins, which meant that I could no longer watch Netflix using Pipelight on Chromium.
Ugh.
That upset me.
Oh, dear.
Because I was using it in an XBMC plugin, which opens it like full screen.
You mean Kodi?
No, it's still called XBMC. It's not. They haven't got the new release yet. Because there's an extension you can get which opens Chrome full screen at a website. And then you just shut it down by pressing Control W, and it goes back to XBMC. But I loaded up Netflix and it said, no, you don't have Silverlight installed. So I've now had to hack it around so that it launches Firefox instead, which still supports it and still works.
Mm.
Excellent. Yeah.
So as you may have noticed, we didn't have a lot of feedback this time. So if you'd like to get in touch, here's how.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that tickles, titillates, or taunts you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. We really would like to hear from you. So go on, do your duty, keep calm, and compose an email.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. The next live show will be on Wednesday, the 20th of August at 8:30.
In the
looking forward to that, Tony.
Yeah, I'm not going to be here.
What?
Oh no. Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be away.
Okay.
And then Malawiing.
Ah.
So I'm going to see you all in about 2 months.
Wow. So how will we cope?
I'm sure we cooked all right tonight.
I'm sure you'll be fine. Good luck, everybody.
Bye-bye, Tony.
Bye.
Bye.